to our last The Supergroup of the season. Oof. That's right. This is the podcast where we take people from the worlds of comedy, the worlds of music. We mix them all together. We create an original tune with my co-host, Alex Kleiner.
Hi.
And we write it in a week, and we record it on it in a day, and we release it for you.
And you enjoy it.
At the end of this episode. Our guests for this final episode of the season, we're so excited to have the co-host of Hollywood Handbook and the co-host of its Stitcher-preem's sibling, Hollywood Handbook, the pro version.
The pro version.
He's also the co-host of LA Podcast.
Yes.
He also is a TV writer.
Oh, boy.
He's getting self-conscious because I've said too many things about him. It's your boy, Hayes Davenport.
Hi.
Hi, Hayes.
I can't believe Alex does the music live during the show.
He's
hitting like the freaking laptop keys.
Yeah, baby.
That's unbelievable.
I'm a one-stop shop.
Well, you just told everyone. Yeah, Thank you for shouting him out.
Yeah, it's really cool.
He's good at all that.
Brett's doing a good job as well.
Yeah.
Well, anything to make Brett's life easier.
Exactly.
Josh is here.
We're all about sharing the load.
Our next guest is an actor. He plays John Newmark and Tip Tamberg in Network 77. but you may know him as Ted Leo from Ted Leo and the Pharmacist. Ladies and gentlemen, Ted Leo.
Hello. I've never been introduced as an actor before, ever.
Well, the first time.
It's important to get all your credits out there.
I know. God, you're going to get SAG.
Get SAG.
SAG.
SAG. SAG.
SAG.
SAG. SAG. SAG. SAG. SAG. SAG.
All members, when they hear the word SAG, have to do the SAG song.
Yeah. SAG. SAG.
The loyalty oath.
Okay, so we started 7 days ago, roughly. That's when I sent out the email. It doesn't necessarily mean that.
I didn't respond for a solid four.
You were on tour.
I bet on this show you find out who responds to emails.
Yeah.
That's a real referendum.
It's actually a big gotcha.
Yeah.
But you know, it makes sense to me because it's not really like a natural way. In my experience, Ted, tell me if you agree, it's not really like the way that most musicians work. So
no, that's true.
I find that like in general, the musicians don't tend to respond because it's kind of like, they're sort of like, well, let's just get in a room and deal with it. Whereas the comedians will really like jump in right away.
Well, I'm famous for not responding to anybody.
You
being a very, very bad correspondent, but I got that email.
You were amazing.
I know. I really astounded myself, but the email was like, here's a thematic area that we can jump off from, and I was like, oh, this has nothing to do with music. This is my time. Yeah. This is where I can really make a play here.
You really did, and I really appreciated your email because sometimes I feel like I'm being too verbose and I'm sending people too much stuff, but you matched that with like an equal amount of nerdery that made me feel very safe. So thank you. So I asked you both, I said, what's a conspiracy theory that you kind of want to believe?
Yeah, I had a couple, but I have this whole collection of cartoon fact books, kind of. There's like the Big Book of Vice is one, the Big Book of the Wild West, and all these weird little stories in each one. And one is the Big Book of Conspiracies that I've had ever since I was a kid. And I pulled it off the shelf and I opened it up and I saw one that I always liked.
Protocols of the Elders of Zion.
Yes. And
my God. We had not talked about that before.
And my email automatically deleted it, which I didn't know was something that Gmail did. So there's like a well-known widespread conspiracy theory that...
I had never heard this. This is
Well, the one that the aliens built the pyramids is like, that one is out there.
There's an entire channel devoted to that, essentially.
Yes. And that the Sphinx is either something built by the aliens or something built by the humans to honor the aliens, something like that. So then in the 70s, they put the Mars Observer up there and it's taking pictures of Mars. And that sent back pictures that sort of looked like there were pyramid-like formations on Mars.
Mm-hmm.
And so these same people instantly are like, well, then there's got to be a Sphinx up there.
It's got to be.
Yeah.
It's got to be a Sphinx
And
up
I
there.
Love that that leap. To make a leap like that so willingly, you have to like really need it. I feel, you know, it just gets to like how much you need something to be true. You know, we live in this very individualized culture. It's people who feel like they need to have some importance in their lives.
Yeah.
And so they have to know something that nobody else knows.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll sort of do anything to prove that it is true.
I like that the whole ancient aliens, like the pyramids, the Sphinx, had to have been built by aliens. I think that's because white people need to believe that slaves couldn't have accomplished it.
Right.
That's what I think is happening.
In fairness, I'm going to defend the ancient aliens.
Yeah, speak up for white people.
They also don't think that like Stonehenge was you know, white people either. No, they think that was alien stuff too.
Oh, okay.
Anything with a big rock had to come from space.
Can I tell you can I tell you my theory about that stuff?
Yeah.
I just think that, I mean, the Sphinx, for example, there's a lot of evidence that when it was built, the Nile was like either shifted over or it was much more of a floodplain. And like some of the erosion on the Sphinx, I think, would have had to come from this time period. But that time period makes it like 7,000 years earlier than other ways to date it. And then you've got the site like Göbekli Tepe in Turkey that's like these 14,000-year-old, you know, stone formations and things. And I just think that you got the underwater temples off Okinawa Japan, you know. And, you know, just like geologically, like these things aren't supposed to exist. And that's one of the reasons that people make the alien leap. But I just think that, honestly, like, humanity is just a lot older than we think it is.
Yeah. I'm down
there
with
was,
that.
There was civilization. I mean, we know that there were other, there were non-Homo sapien civilizations. You know, there was the Denisovans and our famous friends, the Neanderthals.
So that's why you didn't respond to the email, because you were hurt that we were...
I was a little
acting PO'd. Like this wasn't true.
Yeah, well, also, like, you know, look... You guys want to dabble in this.
Damn.
You've got too much information to just play.
I'm so glad I got in first.
No, but the thing, but then you to bring it back to your theories, you brought us back to Mars because I have no explanation for Mars.
So would they anticipate that there must be a Sphinx on Mars, these people.
Mm-hmm.
And then the observer sent back a picture of some rocks that are like casting shadows that look kind of like a face. You know how you can see a face in almost literally anything.
I'm looking at it now. It kind of looks like a tiny dog in, like, a lady put it in a bonnet in her purse.
Yes. And so these people are like, well, there it is. There's the Sphinx. Yes.
The Mars Sphinx.
Yes. And so that the conspiracy theory that there is a Sphinx on Mars.
And
forward.
It must have been built by the same people that built the Earth Sphinx.
Well, it stands to reason.
Yeah.
Hey.
What do you think is two different... Sphinx, two different colonies of aliens building sphinxes on planets right next to each other.
I mean,
okay.
Parallel thought does exist.
That's true. Yeah, who ripped off?
It was in the ether at the time.
Zeitgeist.
It's like how sitcoms were all doing episodes about catfishing at the same time.
Right.
All these alien colonies were building sphinxes on planets.
So we really latched onto this idea of this believer, this person who believes, who's sitting behind a keyboard, posting on this message board, and this weight we started talking about, like this the weight of knowledge.
The
like,
burden.
You guys came to my house. We hung out. We had snacks.
Yeah.
Good snacks.
Thank you so much.
A nice snack plate.
Thank you. I was fishing for snack combos, so thank you.
I think we said, A minor feels like something, and we're like, where can it go? And then to D minor. And like, how do we want to get there? Let's walk through every step. So we started with this verse progression.
It's kind of wandery and like... Mm-hmm.
And then it goes right back down to where it started.
Because he's lonely. He's pacing.
You brought up the fact that you didn't have a 6-8 or like a Watson kind of song yet. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, it went minor in my mind thinking about that.
Yeah.
I feel like with the topic at hand, a major key waltz.
Right.
Yeah.
Would have been weird.
It would be a little too Baroque, you know?
Yeah.
I was very quiet for this part. None of this meant anything to me. I have never done anything in music in my life. My knowledge is really generic. I did it because Ted was doing the show. I mean, normally I would just be like, I'm so bad at this. This is a terrible...
You wouldn't have done it because you enjoy me as a person and you think whatever Tawny makes might be cool and fun.
I don't, but I would have just made it bad because it was Ted. I said I wanted to tell my Ted origin story for second.
Oh, yeah.
On the show, which is I was a freshman in college and I had just been broken up with by my high school girlfriend. Which we made it for like, we were like, we're going to make it work. Like we're going to get married. But
because
we
went to college and like she stayed elsewhere. Or?
We went to different colleges.
Different colleges. Classic.
Yes. And we made it like 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And so I would go on these very long walks. These very like contemplative walks where I was kind of in like the movie of my own misery and like be able to soundtrack it. It's like fall in New England. My friend says, you would really like this band, Ted Leo and the Pharmacist. You should really listen to this band. He sends me 5 of your songs as attachments in an email.
Okay.
Which I guess is, I don't think that was ever really how we shared music. But these were email attachments. I'm on one of my walks, and I decide to play these new songs I've been sent as attachments. And the first one is Bridges Squares, which begins as I walked onto Kendall Square. At the moment I heard that song, I was in Central Square walking to Kendall Square.
Wow.
As I walked on to Kendall Square, across a river basin there.
And I just had this, like, staggering moment of just, like, this song is talking to me. The universe is, has meant for me in this moment to, like, hear some kind of message.
So mostly south, east across upon this sea, rise and soon the sky would be.
I realize now that you were actually heading in the other direction.
I was, yeah.
Yes.
But still, you know.
But the song had this, like, kind of macro perspective that really stuck with me in a way. It's about, like, sort of taking, like, a higher view of things than my own little personal problems that I was stuck in.
Yeah, it took you out of yourself.
Yeah. And it's an urban planning song, which has become, like, kind of this weird, like, amateur interest in my life. And people always ask me, how did you get into this? And I don't really know. But when we were doing this, I was like, God, I mean, that is, like, an urban planning song. And it might have just planted this weird little seed.
That's amazing.
Isn't that crazy?
That's really cool. Thank you for telling me.
Yeah,
that's very cool.
Ted Leo origin story.
We started talking about having these two voices because selfishly I was like, I want to sing too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So
that was a big moment.
Was it a big moment? Was I very rude?
No, I think it was Ted who brought up that it's these two people who post on the internet these conspiracy theories that are living in separate times.
Yeah.
And they both kind of feel like their mission is to take this message that they've received from Martians that lived millennia ago, and they're passing it along to future generations because no one understands them in their own time.
Yeah.
But then you realize at the end of the song that they're living in these separate times, and one of them is reading the post that the other person put up like 20 years ago, and it's like informing their own.
Yeah.
Like they are communicating across time, yeah. Like in the movie, I brought up the movie The Lake House.
Yeah.
Where they put messages in. Well, the movie should be called The Mailbox because they put messages in a mailbox. The mailbox is magic.
But where is that mailbox?
The mailbox is at a lake house.
There you
but,
go.
I mean, I guess, who knows? Is it? I don't know. It seems like the less important part of it.
After we came up with that verse progression from A minor to D minor right back down, you did some melody ideas.
Message from the ceiling, all your feet of clay. Something many times.
So there was some chatter in the background, and I think that is
they were enjoying snacks.
Is
they
that
were
not
enjoying
okay? snacks.
No, it's great. The only
all
part
the like Twitter videos of musicians I see in the studio, they're all like talking in the.
Oh, so you did it on purpose?
Well, yeah, I'm just trying to fit in.
Yeah. So I sang some nonsense. We didn't have any words yet. We were talking about themes, though, and we were talking about this person who, they're bearing the weight of this knowledge, but they also have this false confidence.
We tried to illustrate that musically by giving the chorus the spaces where this person uses the verse to talk about how dissatisfied they are, how burdensome their existence is. And then the chorus is when they like ascend a little bit and kind of give their tale, take essentially what we did in the verse, but move it to a major up to D major instead of D minor. It sounded like this. And then just walks down, but only using major chords.
Yeah. It's got a little gospely because of that Wurlitzer sound.
Yeah.
Feeling groovy.
Yeah. It is a little feeling groovy.
Yeah.
Just the juxtaposition of that kind of song being about somebody posting on Ancient Aliens message boards on the internet. I love that. That's my favorite thing about
it. Well, and
Hayes,
you are such a cool like presence in the room because you just grabbed a laptop computer and like sat there having never written lyrics or not having a lot of experience in music self-admittedly but like and you just went to town and made some like really cool stories.
I still have it because I had handed you my laptop. There's like 9
and Tani
stanzas.
Was very cool about that. I'm not gonna give someone my laptop.
She did say if there was anything embarrassing then you wouldn't speak again.
Did you snoop around? Did you look around?
No.
Did you read any of my other notes?
No, even when I opened the notes app I was like this is a violation. Yes, of course I didn't
there's
read
one,
any other notes.
There's one that just says next steps.
Oh my God. That's kind of scary.
I know.
It only says that.
Yeah. Ted, a long time ago when I asked you to do this, I think you were like the first person I booked. I think Earwolf greenlit the thing, and I texted you immediately.
Oh, yeah.
Like, well, you did
that's
this?
Right, I remember that, yeah.
And when we talked about it, I think I asked you if there were any genres or anything that you hadn't explored yet or that you wanted to do. And you told me a while ago that you were like, I kind of have never done like a straight up soulful piano ballad.
Yeah.
Which this isn't totally, but it
abuts.
Yeah, it abuts it. Yeah. It's kind of close to your song from The Hanged Man, Nazarene. I don't know. Are the chord progressions anything the same? Not really.
Well, that's like an E minor, but it's, it kind of goes down. Yeah, it's like E minor, C minor over E minor, A minor. Like it does that walking down kind of thing.
I think it's the walking down.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, that's the part that strikes me as very uniquely you. Mm. So I don't feel like Alex and I have written anything that walks like that.
Oh, no.
So it already sounded totally different than any of the previous songs.
Yeah, I do a lot of walking around in my songs these days. Yeah. There's a lot of up and down.
Walk around in these song
side
streets.
To side. I get yelled at by mutual friend Amy Mann, who I also write with, for having too many chords.
Too many?
Too many chords.
Never
enough. Often. Can't do it, man. Too many chords.
Too many chords.
Is that her yelling?
That's what That's I imagine her yelling.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it's very soft and Grammy worthy.
Can't do it, man. Too many chords.
Too many chords.
And you're just like,
and then she harmonizes
Amy,
perfectly
please.
With herself.
Calm down, Amy.
Hayes, other than listening to Ted when you were walking in his exact reverse footsteps, what were some of your other like big musical, like in your turning point years that were, you know, genres and artists maybe that...
God.
Was that any sentences?
No, I understand what you meant.
you know the aura of what I mean.
Yeah. It was like kind of withheld for me for a long time. I wasn't really listening to what like modern music until I was probably in high school. Mm. Because I was just kind of like a dorky kid and my parents sort of sheltered me. And so I would listen to oldies, the oldies station all the time.
Like
how old at the time 50, 60, 70. I mean now they play like the Red Hot Chili Peppers on the on the oldie station, but at the time it was, and it wasn't like Glenn Miller and then the Andrew Sisters it was the coolest thing would be like Question Mark and the Mysterians and like that kind of thing, and I would listen to Chantilly Lace by the Big Bopper and act it out for my parents.
Oh my god.
Because there's a whole like phone conversation at the beginning and I would be in like my, you know, I was doing the whole performance.
Do I want? Will I want? Oh, baby, you know what I like. Chantilly lace and a pretty face.
No, I feel like you have such a knack for lyrics.
Boy.
Thank you. You really do.
It was really scary. I signed up for, I thought a lot more than I could like pull. I went home last night and like sat down and was just kind of like, what the fuck am I doing?
You
I
turned have, it around
I,
so
I
fast.
I have absolutely no idea how to even begin this.
So I had laid down all these tracks that were like no words, just nonsense mumble.
Ideas
just
for melodies.
Yeah. Thank you for, it was not nonsense. They were ideas. And then for Hayes to write to so that he would have the pattern or whatever. And you sang over it.
I did.
What was your setup? How'd you do this?
Well, I have a little like home podcasting equipment, and so I have this tiny little office at home, and I just sat in there and was singing a bunch of stuff into it, and I cut it together on Audacity. I really went for
it. You really did.
Wow.
And it was
awesome.
So yeah, we wanted two voices, but because of the loneliness of the song, we needed thematically for that to make sense. So Hayes, when you wrote the lyrics and then demoed them in your house, you did a cool thing for us where you sang with yourself.
It was very
so that you
cool.
could demonstrate one voice, two voice.
Yes.
Cause I'm not wrong.
It's
all I've been looking
it's
for.
Good.
I see all the patterns like a it's soap opening every
are you mortified
got
right
a
now?
Message
no,
from
I like this
friend.
Little
red.
Guy.
From before and above.
I love this. I love how into it you got.
It's great.
I know. I decided
it's a cool
to
artifact.
Really just let it go.
It's yeah, that's right. It is an artifact.
It's a really cool artifact.
Yeah.
The future people will think came from space.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's right. And I also, I did this sort of thinking it would change more than it ultimately did. I mean, like, well, certainly that vocal track is not in the final song.
Oh, we haven't put it together yet.
I was kind of like messing with the lyrics, thinking that they would be edited a lot.
I anticipated it was going to be more challenging than it was. It ended up being fine because we were ambitious. And Ted, I think you even said, like, this is going to be complicated. We want these two points of view, these two people who can be singing together but about separate times. Mm-hmm. But then we also wanted you know, all these rich details. There's so many rich details in this stuff. But sometimes with songs, if you start having too many rich details, like, you know how Led Zeppelin has all those fucking songs about Lord of the Rings?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, like, because it's Led Zeppelin, you're okay with it. But every now and then you hear Frodo and you're like,
do they?
I don't want – oh, yeah. They're very into Lord of the Rings, and it's a bit of a turnoff.
I'm a little sad now.
Mm. Yeah.
It enhances the experience for me.
Oh, it does? You like it?
I'm just kidding. It's my favorite thing, Ted Leo. Come on.
The pain of war cannot exceed the woe of aftermath. The drums will shake, the castle wall, the ring rings ride in black.
Ride on. Ted picked up a guitar.
As he does.
As I am wont to do.
In my house, nearby to snacks.
Just improvising. Well, then we had a bridge.
Oh, yeah.
Gotta have a bridge.
Yeah, so in the bridge, we had the thing where we're like, okay, does it want to live in major or minor? We said major. Mm-hmm. And then we're like, cool. So we decided it should go kind of a weird motion to a C major. And then we were like, Ted, you said, well, maybe it needs a modulation. Mm-hmm. So we were like, kind of going from C to D. And we're like, okay, so what's next? Up to E? Okay, E. And we're like, well, maybe keep going up to F, to G.
Yeah.
And then right back to A minor. So it just kept walking up.
That's such a fun thing about doing key modulations, you know, is finding the way to get back.
Right.
If you're going to go back.
Right.
You know, if you're going to go back, finding the way back.
And the approach we took was to just keep walking until you literally around, come back.
You go around all the way around the horn.
Right, exactly.
I think that jump to C there feels like shocking and cool. And
right. And so the bridge was something that kind of became a stumper.
Yeah, well, I just started making noise when we were just in my living room. I was like, well, I just want this to be like ooey and ahy, and like maybe there'll be words later. But when Hayes took it away to write words to it, it was perplexing to
me.
I listened
to that at home, and I just opted out.
In fact, in the voice memo you sent us, you said exactly this.
I don't really understand the bridge. I gotta skip the bridge because I don't really know how to write lyrics for that part or what's supposed to be happening in it. So I'm just moving on to the next. I was stretching myself so far already.
You nailed
at that
it.
Point, and so I just thought, okay.
I just thought it was so funny.
Probably enough.
I liked you leaving it in, like, hey man, I'm not gonna fuck with this.
All right, now we have to take a break, but we'll be right back with more of the Supergroup. The song was written. Now it was time to jump into the studio and put it down so you can hear it.
Got that pizza throat.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, that pizza throat. Mm-hmm.
Got that cold brew larynx.
I love this bass part so much. I love how it was recorded. It kind of ended up setting the foundation for what the final song was going to be. Was following what the bass was doing.
Yeah.
Well, we had my friend Ralph, our friend Ralph, who plays in my band, come in and play drums on the track, which was fun.
Ralph Darden, who I weirdly knew from Chicago, and now we know each other again. It's been great. He plays everything, right?
He does, yeah.
What a crazy way to record. Like, just in a room with a bunch of... No, it's kind of awesome, because I'm like, oh, okay.
I liked singing this one because I wrote like nice, low, breathy things that I could kind of have a lot of texture with. And then I got to sing big, belty things in the choruses where I get to have a little more power and more brightness.
'Cause I'm not wrong. I see the patterns like a song. Heard a message from a friend from before and above. Do you have another way to get above to be above below?
You can you like just pop it in your head like far and about, like
yeah.
Sometimes lyrics tell you how the music should go. Like when you say something like above, as Alex rightfully pointed out, maybe I don't want to have the melody descend.
Sort of do a harmony yourself where you go,
a message from a friend from the four and above.
You know,
there it is.
Yeah. From the four and above.
Yeah.
Yeah. Heard a message from a friend from before and above. I don't need to meet you. Feel your love.
All these people in music have heard seemingly a lot of songs.
Yeah.
Too many, I think.
Yeah.
It messes me up.
Mm-hmm.
You really only need four
songs?
Which songs
really
in your four? Life, yeah.
Which
yeah,
one?
Yeah.
Happy birthday. You choose the four. But
that
then
one
that's
comes
it.
Up a lot.
You need happy birthday.
Some sort of holiday song.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. And you need a Yankee Doodle if you're an American.
So Yankee Doodle.
Yankee Doodle for every holiday.
Christmas yeah. Time by Wings.
Yeah,
if you're a baseball fan, take me out to the ballgame.
Take me out to the ballgame. That's the big four.
That's
the big four.
So Hayes was one of the first people in this season to really function more as the lyricist, like even more than me. He pretty much wrote the entire first pass of lyrics. But we did change some of his words with his permission, but because he's a writer, he wanted to make sure it still got the same message across.
The one line I'm having trouble phrasing, they say I'm spending too much time
oh,
alone.
Oh, yeah. Okay,
right. Oh, we kept they say. Good.
Well, I want to keep they say.
It went from like being so embarrassed by my work to as soon as it was changed at all, being
yeah.
Like, I will die for this.
Oh,
every
I
day.
Knew.
Oh, that was your
I yes. Knew you would be when I didn't hear that from you.
Collaborative writing is really, it's really hard to
it's
like
yeah.
Purge your preciousness.
Can drop the ing. They say I spend too much time alone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just how do you feel about that? Dropping the ing.
The gerund.
They say I spend.
Okay. But then I get three letters. To
yeah,
add later.
Wherever you want, and then you can also hit me.
Ted, you've done a lot of collaborating with, as you mentioned before, Amy Mann.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like you collaborate with lots of people.
I don't really that often. You know, writing with Amy's been the biggest, meaning like the most that I've collaborated with somebody. Collaborating, writing collaboratively, like going back to talking about those couple of words, is, you know, like when Amy and I decided to start writing together and it became a real thing and it wasn't just like, you know, goofing around in the dressing room or whatever. The first time that I got like a note back on something that, because we write, because I'm East Coast and she's out here, you know, we tend to write like over Skype. I remember like the first time I sent her something that came back with a like, I don't understand what's going on. What's going on with these words? Like, what, you know, let's figure this, you know, let's dig in and figure this out. And of course, she was right, you know, and I was able to write something a lot better. But it was such a flaming ego hurdle to get
yeah.
over, you know, or to purposely
yeah.
knock over, you know. Like, it just was like, and then it blew everything open for me when I was like, oh, we're working toward the same end here,
yeah,
you know, and we're working toward writing the best song that we can write together. And so then it just becomes like a puzzle, and it's fun to actually, you know, kick your own ideas.
Yeah.
In the dirt a little bit.
Because
yeah.
then, I mean, you must start to feel like, oh, there's thousands of ideas.
Yeah.
Whereas before, if no one's really ever challenging them, you can kind of just be like, well, that's the idea and that's
well,
kind of all I have.
And one, you know, I mean, obviously one likes to think that, you know, one can challenge oneself to push past your initial burst of something. But looking back on past work of mine, there's certainly stuff that I wish I could go back and just punch up or retweak a little bit, because I did, like, there are things that I know that I let go that just seemed fine.
Yeah.
That mm-hmm. if I actually did, like, if I did push myself a little harder, like, I could have come up with something better.
Does it ever feel like with Spotify now? Because, like, if someone buys a CD or, like, a vinyl, you can't edit it. But now it must kind of feel like you could make a few tweaks and just, like, email Spotify at MP3 and be like, hey, you just, like, slip this into the...
You know, that's actually kind of interesting. I hadn't thought about that, but...
I'm sure that has been
I
done.
I bet I could do that. I own the masters to
yeah.
that record. No. No, I mean, maybe pull the old album down and
oh, yeah.
just put it up with a new edit, you know? Not a bad idea.
Ted, I think in my head I had that you are like the collaborator about town. You work with a ton of people. You co-write stuff all the time. And so it's kind of wild to me.
That's Tony Bennett.
You're right. I mixed you up with Tony Bennett.
We get confused a lot.
So I'm just going to do a lot of loud stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. We did the bridge, which was not done.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You
know,
you really did the bridge. I mean, you sort of.
I yelled. We did get, like, we got in our heads to have, like, kind of a Great Gig in the Sky, Pink Floyd sort of moment. You also, Ted also mentioned it being kind of a Prince-y moment, which I dug into quite a bit.
I don't need to know time. Oh, no, there's no way.
Ted is doing his best Rod Stewart in the background of the bridge, too. So, if you guys are familiar with the Faces song Debris, in which Rod Stewart does not sing the lead part, the other guy in the Faces sings it. Is it Ian McClagan? I don't remember. Nerds, get at me. But Rod Stewart takes a rare backseat and is just in the background with his hoarse-ass voice going,
oh, you was my hero. Now you are my good friend.
And Ted did that thing too, and I thought it was cool.
Don't need to meet you. No time, no way.
Yeah, and shout out to engineer Brett over here for putting down at least 100 audio tracks today.
Just the experience of why I've never been in this kind of environment before, and people asking for stuff from Brett and it just being available so quickly.
Yeah.
When you're asking for this very specific thing and I'm just expecting like, okay, one sec.
You know, I feel like I came into Earwolf and I watched the Handbook Boys and Paul and Aukerman. I watch everybody swing their dicks around and get whatever they want, and I was like, that's how it's done. Everybody just asks for shit. You do it.
I'm not saying that Brett does a bad job in our records. We demand nothing of him. It's one continuous track.
You do need to know what your options are before you even know that you can ask for them.
That's right.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, you know how long it took me as like a working musician before I realized that I could like have towels on stage, you know, like things
we
like
have
that,
for
know.
Our podcast record, we have we do need a lot of towels,
right. Yeah. Yes. You're wet boys,
yes,
wet boys.
When's the first
welcome
time
to
you...
wet boys, Stitchy Preem?
You can hear it, you can hear how wet
those damn boys are.
Ted, when's like the first time you felt like you asked for something and like were you nervous?
Okay, I have a very specific memory of this.
Yes.
So, this band I was in the 90s, we were called Chisel, terrible name. Good
band. What was it?
Chisel. And we were going on tour with Velocity Girl. We were playing at Mama Kin in Boston, which you may know.
I don't know Mama.
The Aerosmith Club by Fenway.
Oh, is it still there?
Yeah.
I
think so.
I don't know.
Well, somebody from I don't remember if it was the club or Velocity Girl's management was like, you know, what do you guys want backstage? And, you know, like, I was like, water? And they were like, no, you know, you can have some more stuff. And so we were a three-piece, and we were like, all right, like a six-pack of, like, Newcastle and some apples and some bagels. And then we were sharing this dressing room with Velocity Girl. It was a big space. And we, you know, we walk in, and this was like a month before, you know, we'd arrived at this place. And we walk in and there's a big spread of stuff and there's a little table, and on the little table is a six pack of Newcastle and a bunch of apples and a bunch of bagels, and there's a giant garbage can full of Bud, and our drummer goes up and grabs one of the Newcastles, and I was like, dude, no, there are only six of those. Like, I'm sure that we're probably supposed to just have the Bud from the garbage can, because that seems more like what our lot in life is, you know?
Yeah.
And he was like, no, they said this is for us. I'm like, I know maybe somebody told, but they don't know that we're the opening band. Like, just trust me. Like, just take from the garbage can.
Just take from the
And he's like, no. They said, look, don't you remember six Newcastles,
exactly.
A couple of apples, and a couple of bagels? And I was like, oh, my God.
You're like, the prophecy came true.
From then on, it was like, you know, the hummus train.
Yeah,
oh, man. I've been backstage at your gigs, Ted. I always get a swipe of hummus. Yep. I'm like, this man will ask for his hummus. All right, We're recorded. We're tracked. It's in the can. It's in the box. It's time to mix it up like the cake that it is.
What's great about this song, especially as compared to last week's song, Subtle, this song feels like a live in the room type of recording. Like there was nothing about this song that couldn't be done live. And as we were putting all of the instruments into the mix, I just heard space for this descending plinky piano moment that just kind of walks down. And I think it works really well transitionally into Ted's guitar solo.
Am I just doing it the whole time?
Yes. Yeah. So you gotta take a huge breath before, and then okay. You better not take a fucking breath.
Okay.
Do you know when to dip, or do you want me to cue you?
Cue me, please.
You got it, babe. All right. Shall we just lay this one down? Lil Baby Hayez Davenport. He is a singer, and he needed me to point up and down for when the pitch changed, but that's fine. I did that. So I conducted him like he was a damn Philharmonic, and he sounded so great. So these oohs are mostly me and him and a little bit of Ted on some of the bassier ones.
The whole approach to this song, because it's so ethereal, is I wanted to disorient with as much delay and phasing as possible, and I think it fits into the tone.
I love that.
You want it like that chunky?
I think so.
Ted Leo, if you can imagine, knows what he wants out of his tone and has a traveling pedal board that has, I think, all of his go-to effects on it, so he can really dial in his tone.
It does sound like he's playing the guitar on the moon, which is what we want.
And I just wanted to briefly call out what I think is a cool little post-production moment in the bridge. Ted, in his vocals, sings the words, "No, there's no way." I wanted to add a lower harmony to that. So his original vocal sounds like this.
No, there's no way.
Then using some tuning, I created a lower harmony. Sounds like this.
No, there's no way.
And then together, they sound like this.
No, there's no way.
But just little things like that bring the spice of life to the song.
We needed horns, we decided at the last minute. So we asked our buddy Jordan Katz, and he threw some horns down and sent them to us, and Alex flew them in over these stabby rhythmic moments.
So
then we just have some little vocal dance at the end where Alex just took some of the riffs and some of the alternate melodies that I and Ted had done and wove them together.
Spun?
Spun.
No.
That means you're like Rumpelstiltskin who like, doesn't he like steal a woman's soul and make gold out of it, her hair?
I don't know. I've been called worse though.
You guys are delightful.
Yeah.
I love this song.
I'm truly appreciative of how much you both put in. And you too, Tawny, about how much all of us put
all
into
of
this.
Us, everyone.
You too, Josh. You too, Brett.
Yeah,
how Josh much and Brett. All of us put into this song.
It was really fun. I mean, I so appreciate the opportunity. It was a lot of fun to be able to do some of this with Ted. And it'd be paid $50,000.
I know.
Right? Wait,
it's like Threedom money.
Oh. Yes. Yes.
Oh, shots fired at Threedom. JK. Well, we just have a couple things to do before we debut. Matters of business. Everybody put on your business suits.
Okay.
So we need to name this awesome band that we're in, you guys.
Whoa, okay.
And I'm going to throw that to Ted.
Ooh.
Put you on the spot.
Thank God. Well, Wet Boys.
Yes.
Yes.
I love.
Yes.
I
mean,
yes. Why would it be anything else?
I mean, know? I guess I'm comfortable being called a wet boy.
Yeah.
I guess when I think of my time on this earth. I want to be thought of as a wet boy.
Let me be clear. It's not the wet boys. It's just wet boys.
Oh, like
it's the condo.
Yeah, so yeah, it doesn't necessarily have. We're not. Maybe we're not speaking about us. Maybe,
yes. You
know. Okay, we got our name. We're wet boys. And then Hayes, you're gonna name the track.
That's a lot easier.
You're welcome.
I mean, I think it needs a little more information than it has to kind of like tell the story.
Oh, sure.
And I don't know. Is Sphinx on Mars okay, or is that just too hard to say?
Sphinx on Mars. Good. I just did it.
That's great.
Who has a problem with that? All right, good.
So, were you thinking it needed more information to tell the story of the two people? Like,
yeah, I mean, I don't think I'm going to be able
blah,
to do
blah,
yeah.
Like, whatever.
Well, Sphinx on Mars, colon.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
There we go.
No, I think the word Sphinx, is it in the song?
No. And
because it's, I think, hard to sing, probably.
Mm. Sphinx.
Yeah.
But picture the album cover that we, Wet Boys, Sphinx on Mars.
Yeah, and that, know? Yeah.
This sounds
how
like
those
a,
Wet Boys get to Mars? It's a romp.
Wet Boys, Sphinx on Mars. I like Sphinx on Mars because it's very close to Life on Mars, and we do have a little David Bowie Easter egg in the song.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Which I would never have done on my own, but you... Ted mentioned it first, yeah. And you encouraged it, so, as a David Bowie reference.
Listeners will have to find the David Bowie reference.
We love little references.
Okay, so... Alex, you want to kick
us? I did it last time, Tawny, I think.
Oh, do I do the honors this time?
I think you have to.
Great, okay. Mm. Ladies and gentlemen, we debut for you, Sphinx on Mars by Wet Boys.
Of my shoes.
Tawny, do you have any reflections as the season has come to an end?
Oh, who, me? Why?
Yes, you.
I sure do. This has been quite a dream to trick Earwolf into producing an album for us.
Exactly.
So help us get a season two so that we can get a full 12 tracks. But yeah. No, seriously, everyone's support here has been so great. I feel like I've asked so much of this company I just started working for. So thank you all for not kicking me out into the street. And to work with my longtime friend and collaborative partner, Alex, has been just very rewarding. And I hope we get to do more of it. So everyone, please listen, subscribe, tell your friends. We hope to bring you live shows with many of these amazing musicians. And we can only do that if we have your support, which has already been great. So thank you.
And one awesome way you can support us is by going on iTunes and buying these tracks so we can make up to $12 a person.
Smart, Alex. I forgot. Buy the tracks on iTunes, Amazon Music, whatever that thing is, Google Play. Put several half pennies into our pockets, everyone.
Exactly. The supergroup is hosted by Tawny Newsom and Alex Kleiner. All songs engineered and mastered by Brett Morris. All episodes produced and edited by Josh Richmond. The executive producer is John Asante.
Special thanks to all our guests, Paul F. Tompkins, Caitlin Tarver, Janet Varney, Hollis Wongware, Mark Evan Jackson, Sashir Zameda, Eric Slick, Christian Bruhn, Open Mike Eagle, Mary Sohn, Big Dipper, Hayes Davenport, and Ted Leo.
The Supergroup is an Earwolf production.